most of the time you want to say you want to find only the code part, but then it is really, really hard to do that in Grab. Almost impossible, I would say. AS Grab has another approach because we are searching code. Code can be parsed into syntax tree. Then why don't we just use code to search code?
Hello, welcome to the DevTools FM podcast. This is a podcast about developer tools and the people who make them. I'm Andrew, and this is my co-host, Justin.
Hey everyone, we're really excited to have Harrington Darkholm on today. So Harrington is the creator of AST Grep, which is one of my favorite tools. I'm using it a lot recently. So we're really excited to dig into that. Before we get started though, Harrington, would you like to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, sure. First to say thanks, Justin, for kind words. I'm very honored to be here. And DevTools.fm is one of my favorite podcasts. And I am Harrington. I'm the creator of AST Grep. And previously, I'm also a team member of Vue team. And actually, I have created a Rust-based Vue compiler. And based on that, I get some inspiration of manipulate AST. And that's the birth of AST Grep.
Cool. Yeah, I saw that you had written or were working on a Rust compiler for Vue, which is like, it seems like such a fun project. And it was like very in vogue to like write Rust compilers for frameworks for a little while. So tell us more, a little bit more about that. Like, how did that start?
Yeah, reinventing Vue template compiler in Rust is very fun. Yeah, so, and originally Vue, Vue's template compiler is based on something like the HTML5 project implemented in JavaScript. So that part of code is not, I would say, not that slow, but definitely that will give you some, we can give some performance boost to that. And actually, there's a lot of optimization we can do for the parsing and the transpiler. For example, one thing I do in the build compiler is say, because we are parsing a large strings and we need to extract some atom or some class names from that template, right? But that will usually come with some string allocation. So string allocation, if you are familiar with the native language development, that means I will ask the operating system, oh, I need some memory. And asking memory is pretty slow. And actually, if you have we have a lot of strings in the template and asking memory will be quite frequent. So there is a trick in native development that we can somehow keep that allocation. So in Vue compiler, I do that not based on something like a string returning or atom, which is used in SWC compiler, if you're familiar with this field. But instead, I just reuse the string from the input. Yeah, so say I have a class name called hello world, and I will not say copy that string into the memory, but instead I will store the offset of that string. Yeah, so by doing that, I don't need to maintain any memory, and that will just be two numbers. So that will be crazy fast.
This reminds me a little bit of the conversation that we had with Jared, the creator of Bun, because it's like one of the things that he talked a lot about is like how much string parsing was like pretty key to performance.
Yeah, it was surprising from our conversation. I was thinking about that too, that he was like, yeah, and then I got to like text encoder, and then like just doing that sped up React SSR by just like 10, 20 times.
Yeah.
Crazy the things that are hidden in native code that we're just kind of like in JavaScript land, not even aware of.
Yeah, because JavaScript engine, like V8, has done tons of string optimization for you. So in my eyes, JavaScript string is just a string. Oh, it's atomic, it's immutable. But in JavaScript engine's eye, wow, there's tons of string variation.
So did your Vue compiler project like make it to Vue, or did the project go in a different direction?
Actually, it goes to a different direction. One thing cannot be easily done as parsing the script or the style. So in Vue, we have something called a script setup script. So basically, if you say you declare some variable in Vue's script section, and the Vue compiler will extract them out. And this information or this variable is available in the template part. But this is compiler-based optimization. Yeah. So plan to view requires analyze some scripts or JavaScript. So that will involve some AS debugging or something like that. Yeah. And back then, when the Rust compiler just started, the only JavaScript repository in Rust land is SWC. But SWC is a little bit too heavy to use. Actually, the Vue compilers, the script parsing is pretty easy. It's just like, oh, just give me some script and I will analyze the declaration. And then I will do some, say like some patching stuff like, oh, okay, change this declaration to export or a module.export. But that's pretty hard to do in SWC. SWC is it's a very good project, but to use that requires a lot of learning and a lot of source code reading. So I would prefer to use something more lightweight. So AST is just a tree, right? It's like the DOM tree. It's just that's the best analogy I want to use. So they are both trees. So I can just given an AST, I can think it as a root and I find some DOM nodes. And jQuery, I started to use it. It's about 10 years or more than 10 years ago. I really like it. I still like jQuery, and I'm still very fond of it, jQuery. So you can just find some, say, CSS selector, give it some CSS selector, give it an OK. I want to find some AST nodes. So can you get back a list of a node for me? So that is the starting point of AST graph. OK, I can make the AST parsing just as simple as using jQuery. Well, that would be very cool.
We'd love to thank our sponsor for the week, CodeCrafters. Without our sponsors, this podcast wouldn't be possible. CodeCrafters makes programming challenges for experienced software engineers. If you're looking for a weekend project, or let's be serious, a multi-weekend project that takes you to the edge of your programming capabilities, things like build your own BitTorrent, build your own Git. I've been going through the build your own Git challenge, and let me tell you, it is challenging. It takes me back to my days in college where I had to care about hex and binary and be able to debug those things. What I've been currently trying to conquer is the Git clone challenge. Git clone does a whole lot of stuff. I've gotten past the like negotiation for what things I want. Now I've gone on to pack file parsing and just doing stuff with it. I still have to implement Delta resolution, but I think I can do it while we still have them as a sponsor. I'm determined. Besides the content, even the user experience is targeted towards experienced software engineers. For example, instead of typing stuff into an online code editor that they use, you just do it all from your computer. Use the IDE you want or a text editor and a command line, and you're off to the races. To try out CodeCrafters for yourself, visit codecrafters.io/devtools-fm. There you'll get 40% off, and you'll also be supporting the podcast. And with that, let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's something like, so I want to get into like what AST grep is and why you would use it and how it came about and everything. But I think, I actually worked on a project. So there was a project called TS Query by the same guy who did Betterer. I don't remember, Andrew, if we talked about that tool in the past, but
we've talked about it a lot.
Yeah. So there was a project that was exactly this. It was like CSS style selectors for TypeScript AST nodes, which is really cool. And I had written a CLI project to be able to do that in CLI. But the problem that I always had with that is like, for our listeners who don't know what an AST is, it's an abstract syntax tree. It's the way that code gets represented in a data structure when it's parsed. When you're using a selector-based library like that, you have to sort of know the names of the AST nodes. So there are projects like AST Explorer, which is a web app where you can put some source code in and it will parse it and show you the AST. And you can sort of use that to figure out like, okay, what should my selector be? But that was always the really hard thing, is like you have to have all this knowledge about what the AST like is, like what the nodes names are, and the AST can change between versions of a, like, you know, TypeScript version, TypeScript compiler versions or whatever. So that's actually what led me into tools like AST grep. So why don't you give us a little bit of explanation of like, what is AST grep and, you know, how did it come about? Why did you build it?
Yeah, so AsGraph is a tool. It has a graph in its name. So you can just think about it as a graph. So I assume that many of our listeners have already used graph. So graph is a tool that you can search some text and you invoke the graph, and the graph will find all these text file and find some matched text for you. But one thing is that graph does not understand your code. So if you say you grab something like hello world, that hello world can be an identifier. So it's actually part of code, or it can be in a comment, or it can be in a string. But most of the time you want to say you want to find only the code part, like an identifier name or a method name. But that it is really, really hard to do that in graph. Almost impossible, I would say. And the similar thing, yeah, and you can also think of some similar things like, okay, given this function name, can you find all it, where I call it? Okay, that will be easy in your text editor because you have IDE or language server. The language server will find those method reference for you. But language server only support limited use. So if you are finding some, find a method call, okay, that will be okay. But if you want to find something like, okay, given this method call, I only want to find where the argument is string literal. To map it to a more real world case, it will be, okay, I have a secret file, which is a set password. But in the code base, I don't want to set password by using the string literal. That will be a security issue. So I want to find all the set password call with string literal as the first argument. Yeah, but that will be very hard for either grep or text editor or language server. So AST grep is something like between the grep and the LSP. It knows your code better than the grep. It is not see it is like a text. It's not a string with some sequence of characters. It is a tree. It's like Justin had already said. It's tree. All your code is encoding syntax tree. So you have a tree root, which is program, and then you have a master call node, tree node. And in the master tree call node, you have a measure name and its argument. So AS grep is like grep. And you can find your code based on this tree node. And interesting is that searching a tree is hard because you have to specify, okay, what tree will look like. And that means you need to at least to construct something like binary tree by your hand. If you have any experience with, say, lead coding, you know, construct this test case, tree test case is very hard because you have a node and, oh, okay, the first node is the root node, and the second is its first sibling or its first child, or it's very hard. But AsGraph has another approach. So because we are searching code, right? So code can be parsed into syntax tree. Then why don't we just use code to search code? So that's the birth of its pattern, AST pattern. So AST pattern is like a piece of code. It's a code fragment, but you can somehow replace something can be dynamic, just like the regular expression dot. So dot can match anything, right? And in AST graph, we are not using dot, but we are using something like a meta variable. So it's an identifier that can match any syntax node. So by this way, we can use the code to search code. And that code query is like tree, and it actually understands your code.
But yeah, that's super cool. Like Justin said, like any AST experience I've had, I just go to AST Explorer and I'm like, okay, this is hell. Like I have to translate that into code, and like it just adds so much complexity. But the idea of just being able to like write code and then match that code is super cool. So like, is the way it works that like you kind of like take my input search string and then like make an AST out of that and then like match parts of the tree?
Yes. Yes, exactly. Oh, nice. Exactly. Yeah. So ASGrep is based on TreeSitter. So TreeSitter is a project invented in GitHub. So GitHub is it's the place where we store all of our code. So it, GitHub also has a lot of different code. Different language. Say Java, JavaScript, Python, C. So TreeSitter also supports a wide range of language. And using the TreeSitter, we can say, parse the search query into AST. And based on that AST, I would inspect, okay, the tree node has some special syntax like the meta variable. If yes, okay, I will translate it to a pattern. So, okay, this pattern can match anything. So keep on. And if that it is not, it's just an ordinary syntax signal. Okay, I will also translate it to a pattern node that match exactly of that that syntax. So in this case, everything can be matched against a tree.
Yeah, the thing that I really love about this, so in practice, what it like looks like is, oh, you're searching for a function. You just like write the function name in parentheses. And if there's one parameter, you just do like, what is the syntax? Like dollar and then like whatever, whatever the placeholder would be for that. And if there's multiple variables or multiple arguments to the function, you have a special special thing that you can do there. But it like matches pretty exactly to what you expect. And you don't have to know about you don't have to think about the AST or the nodes or whatever. So it feels a lot like, it does feel a lot like using grep, but without all the, you know, regex pattern matching and all the other, the weird string stuff that you have to do.
Yeah. Especially when you're calling something like call, method call, function call. So you have to match the parentheses. Oh, that will be a lot of regex. And and also the search query is designed like code. So people can use that without consulting to AST Grep Playground or AST Explorer. So that will be a great use case for daily command line use.
Yeah, one thing we haven't mentioned about like how the search syntax is nice is that since you're grepping the AST, white space doesn't matter. Like in a lot of your examples, you have like console logs that are strewn all over the place. And if you wanted to do that with like, find and replace in your editor, it would just be like, you'd have to write some pretty tough regexes to get there. But it leaves me the question, like, if you are doing that, like, do you like save formatting at all? Like if I'm grepping for a console log and it happens to be split out across four or five lines, is that structure kind of preserved?
Yes. Yeah, for the search part, yes, a single pattern can span multiple lines, but that will be a little bit tricky when you're using the replace. So suppose we have a console log and the argument is a one level indented compared to its console log. So when we replace that will be very, very tricky. And if you the ASGrep replacement algorithm is indentation sensitive. So if the argument, as we have said, has indented the one level, then if you use that in the replacement string, it will also be one level indented. Yeah, so in that case, for both of case, it will be, so if you have a search query that span multiple lines, okay, then you have to also use, make the replacement query than multiple lines. Yeah, that's a little bit inconvenient because usually you will have just one query, match all the things. But I choose to still preserve the indentation because for those indentation sensitive language like Python, that indentation is very, very important. And most of the case, if I say I keep the indentation, that will provides a better result. Say I'm finding some function declaration And okay, I find this function declaration, but I want to say in JavaScript, I want to change the function declaration into an arrow function. So keeping that indentation of the function body will be very helpful.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there are a lot of interesting trade-offs here because it's like JavaScript, you know, and languages that aren't white space sensitive are a lot more flexible. And like you're saying that Python for sure, it would be, you know, you could end up with some errors. So it is, but it does still seem like a worthwhile trade-off just because it still does make reasoning about what you're changing a lot simpler.
So one recommendation is to use ASGrep with your formatter. So usually the workflow will be, okay, first I change the code. Okay, and either using the command line or using the batch processing, something like that. And then followed by that, rewrite a format run like Prettier or GoFMT and command it.
Yeah, this is a pretty common strategy for when you're doing code mods too, right? So in the past, I would write like JS code shift scripts. And, you know, have to crawl through the AST and transform things. And usually things were not well formatted on the other side. And it's just like you pipe the output through Prettier and it was like fine. So on the topic of JS CodeShift, so there's, you know, this concept of code mods, which are programs that alter programs. For ASTGrep, you actually have this notion of a rule which can go through and do things like apply rewrites. So it can like do a search pattern and apply a rewrite. So essentially modify your code. Can you talk a little bit more about rules and how you use them?
Oh, yeah, of course. So we have already talked pattern. So pattern is a convenient suite to construct to find your code. But usually it is not powerful enough. Say, if I want to write a pattern that is, say, a function call. So what if there is a comment between the function name and the parentheses? So usually that will be hard to write a pattern for that because, okay, I both want to write, say, a meta variable for the function name, but I cannot write a meta variable for the comment. Because that will not pass by the tree sitter. So an AST tree rule is something that combines the expressiveness of a rule system and between the convenience of a pattern. So say for the example we just talked about, oh, you want to find a function call, but that will be a comment between that. So you can write something like that. First, you have ASNode kind, so you have to look at up in the AS Explorer. So okay, it's a function call. And then you can also have write something like CSS selector like that. Okay, I also want this function call has a child of a comment. Yeah. So combine these two rules, we can precisely locate some. Precisely locate some AST node that is not expressible with pattern. And based on that rule, we can also compose very complex rewrite. Some part of the the rule will be matched into a meta variable. That meta variable can be used in the fixed string. And a fixed string is also a string, but it can contain some meta variable. The meta variable is a match key, is a match group, like a regular expression that matches some syntax node. So by using the rule, meta variable, and the fixed string, we can do a pretty complex code rewrite.
So this is really getting into the code mod use case, right?
Yes.
Because traditionally, some people might write rules or whatever with just regex, right? So regex, try to find this pattern in my code, is going to have false positives because it's going to match on a comment somewhere or something, which is typically why we don't do that, or just like using raw grep. And then the code mod situation, we're using something like JS code shift, you're writing programmatic code, and it's programmatic because you have to find things with all these relationships. It's like, I want a function with this signature that has this thing in the body, and then I want to do some rewrite rule to it. So you're saying for for the rules, you can sort of express them as like, oh, I have this pattern and maybe a composed patterns, like multiple patterns that are together. And then you can use that as collection of information to form some pretty complex rewrites.
Yeah. So it scraps rule system or pattern system. And I would just call it, it's progressive. So it's a scale from a simple usage. I can search and replace with its pattern, but it can progress or scale to a more complex situation. Like you want to find some specific node that's inside another specific syntax node. Like, okay, I want to find a set password call inside an insecure function or in an insecure call context. So that cannot be easily expressed by pattern. Or if I want to express that pattern, I will usually introduce a lot of syntax for that pattern code. So user will have to learn both the host language, like JavaScript, and also the pattern syntax. So that's the one thing I want to avoid.
We'd like to thank our second sponsor for the week, runme.dev. When it comes to cloud infra, we live in a fractured and complicated world. It's 2024 and we're still storing opdocs and wikis and relying on a bunch of scripts and markdown in fractured repos. RunMe wants to put opsdocs in your repo along with the rest of your code. With RunMe, you can empower your whole team to be in charge of your infra with simple notebooks, create mission control dashboards, interactive external docs, or even operational runbooks. To get started, head over to runme.dev. So one type of lint rule that I write a lot is like parent-child relationship stuff. So like in React, it's like, oh, you can't use this component inside of this other component, or like in hooks, you can't use these browser APIs in like certain situations. So do rules allow me to like start linting for that type of stuff?
Oh, kind of. So as long as this thing, if you are having a special hook in the browser code, as long as that browser code can be identified in AST in the same file, that can be fine. Say if you have you are using Next.js, right? And you have some server API that you don't want to be called in the client code. So if that file has a use client directive at the top of your file, then it's definitely the browser file. Then using the AST, I can say, okay, first I want to find the server API call. And it should be inside a file with a use client directive. So that rule is perfectly expressible in AST. But there will be something more difficult. Like, okay, this file is sometimes used in server and sometimes using client because it's a common utility tool. So finding this use case will be a lot harder. And it should actually understand every language and every semantic of both your library and also your framework and your language. That will be a lot harder.
Yeah.
So talking about the rules a little bit more. So rules are expressed in a YAML file.
Yeah.
So why did you go for a configuration file over like a code-based approach like JS CodeShift has?
Yeah, I can talk about that. First, I think using a script language or general purpose language is definitely better than YAML. YAML is... At most time, it's sweet. 80% of the time, it's sweet. But the 20% of the time, it will make you, oh, no. Yeah, we all know the Norway problem or other weird YAML stuff. YAML is readable and then learnable, but it is hard. And it does not offer the expressiveness general language, purpose language. But general purpose language, choosing one that is suitable for scripting is hard. Say if I want to support JavaScript or as ASGrep's first class citizen, then every ASGrep user will have to integrate JavaScript in their workflow. That will be easy for JavaScript or a web developer. because everyone uses JavaScript. But for Golang, no developer or Java developer, that will not be the case. And using a new language for them is hard. But YAML, on the other hand, is more like a configuration file. Okay, that's not a new language, and you can use it with your text editor. It's probably already inside your code base. So introducing a YAML will be much easier for most diverse developers.
So you've built a lot of things, and one of the things you've also built is tests for these YAML defined rules. So can you walk us through like how the testing works?
Oh yeah, of course. So authoring a rule is hard. It's really hard, especially if you are authoring one time or one pattern. Oh, that will be easy. You can complete it in seconds. But writing a significant or a serious rule that can handle a lot of edge case, that will be very hard. So ESLint has a special ESLint rule test. And also other tools like JS Code Shift or ShamGrep or other things will also have a test utility to test your rule or handle all those edge cases. That should also be convenient in ESGrep. So ESGrep has a test folder that can store all your test case valid or invalid. And also it will produce a snapshot if the code is invalid, what kind of, error or what kind of match will your rule produce for this invalid code. So in this way, evolving your rule or distributing your rule will be more convenient, and that the rule also will also be more confident when shipping this rule. Because I have an edge case like, oh no, I want to match all function declaration in JavaScript. Okay, I write a function expression, arrow function, function declaration, but later I found, okay, I forget to handle this method declaration. So using this rule tester will help you to evolve your rule.
So I love how like the CLI is like, looks so easy to set up. It has a very, very nice experience where it's like, oh, where do you want to set things up? How do you want to set it up? So getting off the ground is very easy. And it seems like it's like you've built kind of like a general purpose linting tool. And one hallmark of linting tools is plugins and extensions. So have you thought about like what it looks like to bring other like rules that are defined outside of the repo in? So like, say I wanted to like recreate a React's hooks rules plugin. Yeah. Could I potentially publish that and have people use that in their ASTGrep projects?
Yes. Because everything in ESGrep is file-based. Or the only thing you need to set up is the root configuration file called sdconfig.yaml. And whatever rule you want to use can be just a folder in your repository. So you can use, say, if it's a GitHub repo, you can just clone it as a submodule of your Git project. Or it can also be published on NPM. So you can install that and you find that code, find that rules in node modules. So I have not decided, I don't want to build a rule registration for ASGrep, but instead I want it to follow the host language. If you are using JavaScript, okay, use NPM. If you are using, say, Python, use pip. Or if you use something like old code, or like CPP, or you cannot do that. Okay, you can still rely on the old vulnerable Git submodule. So this way, it takes a little opinion on how you distribute your rules.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can see similarities in the patterns that you've already discussed, and like you want people who are writing rules in a language to be able to think about their language and not have to think about like other languages. So it makes sense that integrate this approach. One other thing I wanted to ask about is you also have some SDKs that you've written so far. So there's at least one for JavaScript and one for Python. And looking through those, they look like they're sort of just read-only SDKs at the moment. I'm not sure exactly what the extent of the SDK is. So what can you explain a little bit about the SDKs and maybe what their limitations are or what they're kind of designed for?
Yeah, so ASP.NET is a progressive tool. It's like Vue, it's a progressive framework. So pattern and rule can handle most of your time, most of your case. But you will still have some your customized scenario, and you need something as imperative that's very, you want to build a very complex rule that cannot be expressed by YAML or something like the CSS selector. Then that's the use case for SDK. And one thing that if you want to have more powerful things or more complicated, you want to have a powerful tool to handle complicated scenario, you have to, say, pay some performance cost. By performance cost, I mean for rules, AS group rules, it can natively run on multiple threads because this graph is written in Rust. So it does not, it is not like JavaScript that is a single threaded. Rust can exploit multiple threads natively. So running rules will be much faster because all of these rule execution is a machine code. So, but SDK will be slower because you have to pass this code to the virtual machine. And these virtual machines usually do not have multiple threads. Like JavaScript is single thread, and the Python, in old Python, it is GIL. But I know but in old Python, you have GIL. However, SDK is much more flexible. Let me give you an example. So suppose you want to find a function call with five or more arguments, but these five or more arguments should have some special rules for them to be matched. Like, okay, these five arguments out of four should be Boolean. So that will be very confusing. So for this very specialized or customized the scenario, using a YAML-based rule will be very verbose, if ever possible, to express this scenario. Also, sometimes you want the tool to understand your code better. So just we have said, ASP.NET rule at the moment cannot analyze cross-file symbols or cross-file ASTs. But using the SDK, you can first resolve this file from your end. So because you are writing JavaScript, you must know JavaScript better than ASP.NET. Okay, so you can first do some file resolution things and give this resolved file to ASP.NET. That will be much more powerful.
Yeah, it's probably out of scope, but it would be really cool if there was like some way to like connect the ASTs. Cause like, as you said, like maybe I have a helper function that uses like window and I can't use that in like certain scenarios. It'd be super cool to be like, oh yeah, this AST kind of just like plugs in right there.
Oh yeah. Yeah, that would be very powerful. Well, then I think that would be out of the scope of a roadmap project.
Okay, so you're working on some other tools. You have a VS Code extension in the works. Can you tell us what it does and what you plan to make it do?
Oh, yeah. So at the moment, the ASP.NET VS Code has two main functionality, or two main features. The first one, ASP.NET has a language server. So if you have a sgconfig, it will set up the linter for you. So you will see, okay, you set up the rules and then open your editor. Okay, the editor will report issues for you. So that's the LSP part. But there is also another feature, search and replace. So most of my user are not living in the command line. They are not living in the terminal, but instead they live in VS Code. So you have a VS Code extension that can take your pattern and find it in your code, which will be very convenient. And more importantly, if you want to do some replacement that needs to take some matching group in your search, that will be very hard to use with a regular expression. You have to know the matching group or something like that. But in AstroGraph, that's a meta variable, and you can simply use that in a replacement string. So that will be very convenient. So AstroGraph and VS Code will have these two main features. And for the search and the replace part, I'm still doing that. That is a lot of work. That's truly a lot. And I'm really amazed with the VS Code UI. So all the UI details is really nice and very pleasant. If you look at the file match, so every file will have its search match. But if you scroll a little bit the scroll list or results list, you will see some box shadow from that file item. Well, that's really subtle, but also really good eye candy.
Yeah, they've got some good UI UX going on there.
Yes.
Yeah, I've been learning that a little bit of box shadow can go a really long way to make your UI just really look good.
The VS Code extension is going to be awesome, though. I'm super excited about it. I'd been messing around with the versions you have released now that just has the search in it, and it's good. It's really good. I think that like this is the kind of thing that is a good inroad for people. Is like they pull this in, and it's just like a really great way to, you know, search your code base and actually find the code that you're looking for, which is, you know, harder than it should be sometimes. And then I think that it's a really interesting on-ramp to then like doing things like writing rules, because in a lot of ways I see this as, you know, Andrew, you mentioned like linters earlier, you know, whether it's a code mod or a lint rule or whatever, AstGrep is such a simpler tool for like expressing those things. Cause you are kind of thinking very similar to the language that you're, you know, trying to write the thing for, which is like very much not the case if you're trying to write a lint rule or something. Like I have to relearn the syntax trees every time I go back there and like write a lint rule for something. It's like there's a re-education process every time. So this will be really good.
Yeah, personally, I work across a lot of different language. So in my day job, I use JavaScript, TypeScript, and also Golang, sometimes Python. And in my spare time, in my hobby time, it's Rust and Python. So work across this language. And first, not all language have a decent linter tool or decent code mod tool. And the second, every code mod tool has its own unique design for that language. So usually pick up a new code mod tool will require learn both the new language and the new tool. But AstGrep at least want to unify these language difference. So at least you learn one AstGrep tool, and that concept of ASC and AST rule matching will be similar across different languages.
So you already have a pretty full featured tool, and you're expanding into like tools for your tool, as we just talked about. But what do you have planned for the future? What features do you want to bring to AstGrep?
Oh yeah. So a lot of the user has asked me pretty many times that, oh, can I have it use the AstGrep in my own project? Oh, it will have a web playground. And I also want to build a playground like AstGrep. Can you help me that? A web assembly is a big thing for users. And especially for older nodes or some older Linux system, WASM is very useful since I cannot compile a lot of preset files on this system. Using a WASM will be very, very helpful. So WASM is a big thing. And the other thing is still the VS Code extension. So because VS using CLI requires some learning, you have to read doc. Okay, I have this common argument And also the command line has its own grammar. You have to learn that. But you're using VS Code, you just look at that logo and click on that. You see the input and other things. Oh, that will be very intuitive for user to learn. So VS Code is the next big thing. And finally, there may be some more customized rules. So at the moment, you can only choose a YAML-based rule or a full-fledged SDK. But I'm thinking about doing something between, that you can build some your own rules using WASM. But that WASM rule can also be registered on the YAML part. So once you write you have your WASM ready, and also you can use it in your YAML rule. That will preserve the declarative nature of the YAML rule, but still preserve the expressiveness of imperative programming.
That is really cool. That's a cool approach. I had not thought about WASM as a good build target for like older platforms that might not support other things, but that's an interesting perspective. So we always ask a future facing question at the end of our episodes, and one that I think would be interesting to ask you. You're doing a lot of, in your free time at least, you're doing a lot of tooling in Rust. Do you think Rust is the future of web-based tooling? We've talked about some of the places where it like works well, and like some of the places where it's hard, like with the Vue compiler. So what do you think the future is there?
Yeah, that's my disclaimer. That's my own opinion. That's not to represent anything else. So for tooling, yes, Rust is the future of web-based tooling because Rust is fast. It does not have a garbage collector. And not having garbage collector is a very good trait. It's a very good feature that you can bridge Rust with V8. So using V8 objects in Rust is like using a smart pointer in Rust. So you just have the, because V8 exports some, it's smart pointer or GCT, which is a smart pointer that manages the heap and the JavaScript object. So if you're using that in Rust, that will be very easy. But if you are using something like a language with runtime, for example, Go is very, very fast. But using Go with JavaScript engine will incur some overhead because you have to take care of a garbage collector both in JavaScript and that garbage collector in Go. That is also okay, but just requires some more modification for the runtime engine. And another thing is not only Rust the language itself, but also it's ecosystem. One thing I want to praise, and one thing I'm always praising, is NAPI.rs. It has really great API design, and the JavaScript language is nice. Actually, NAPI.rs is one of the best bridging tools I have ever seen and ever used. Brutally, it is the best of all time.
Yeah, the NAPI project is so, it's pretty amazing. Having good bridges between languages is so important in that project. Is
yeah, awesome. Because before NAPI.rs, if I want to use it, say I want to use CPP to bridge my Node my native code and with the Node.js runtime, that will be a lot of code. First, I need to grab something like isolate environment. A lot of things I cannot tell the difference with. Yeah. But you need to grab them and use a lot of ceremony to set them up to do a simple thing like 1 + 2 = 3. But with NAPI, you can just using a declaration that decorate your Rust function, and everything runs under hood, and you just write 1 + 2 = 3. That will be about 5 lines of Rust code. Very easy.
Yeah, it's great. Those integrations are super powerful, and I think that we're seeing a lot of like really powerful tooling that's coming out because we have things like NAPI. And I will say, I'm always a shill for Dino. I think Dino is like native Rust integration. It's so nice. So better interfaces are good.
Well, that's it for what we got for questions. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Harrington. This was a really fun conversation, and the tool you've built is super cool. Like, I've already shared it to my work, and people have gone like, wow, that's something I already needed. So you've definitely made a tool that I think a lot of people are going to like. So I hope it catches on.
Yeah. And glad you have me here. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Just to repeat, Andrew, like, so glad that you came on. And I mean, ASTGrep, I mean, I use it all the time. I really use it all the time. I love it. It's a cool tool. So I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.